So the title of my talk is called Drop in Science. It comes from a rap terminology. And so sort of around the time when I first got started in games, I started in 1994, way back when. And I did start Electronic Arts. One of the first games that I worked on was NBA Live. So that was NBA Live 95, way back in the days of the Sega Genesis. And so the cool thing now is that I'm actually, as of January this month, back at Electronic Arts, and I'm working on NBA Jam. So yeah, it's gonna be lots of fun. It's basically taking, if anybody's played the arcade version of NBA Jam, anyone? Hands? Yeah, so it's a real arcade kind of basketball game, you know, one-on-one kind of thing, and well, player versus player, and it's going to be pretty exciting. And I'm also, oddly enough, working on NBA Live again, so like all these years, like over 15 years later, I'm working on it again. And I also do teaching, and that's part of my thing with videogameaudio.com, so you should have a look there. I have a whole bunch of lectures and stuff that I put up there. And also, yeah, videos, papers that I've written. And yeah, I'm really excited to be here, so thanks very much for the invitation. And yeah, it's a packed house. Wow, exciting. So, yeah, the title is Drop in Science, subtitle Adaptive Music Design. And I want to really just give, in a sense, like a bit of a background first. And from there, I will try to give a little bit of breadth on other things that are related to adaptive music as it relates to games. So yeah, history of adaptive music in games, sort of the breakdown. If anybody knows about sort of rap style stuff, the breakdown is when you break the song down to like its essential elements. So usually, you know, it just gets down to like either the drums and the bass, right? And so if you've listened to any music, the breaks, right, that's where it's like old funk stuff, typically, that it's been sampled, where there's a break in the song, it's the drum break, right? So what I'll do is I'll basically dissect adaptive music and break it down for you, and through examples, and then I'll give a couple of related topics. And the little sort of graphic that I found there, it's like a t-shirt design, I thought it was pretty cute, sort of related to Space Invaders, one of the first games with adaptive music. It had four notes in it, wow, 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 right? And then that just got faster and faster and faster until you either cleared the screen or you had to put in another quarter, right? And so that game was so popular that they ran out of that particular coin in Japan when that game was released. So at the height of its time, it actually, like, you know, it consumed that particular kind of currency. Okay, so history, yeah, four note heartbeat with Space Invaders, it's effective. And so what I'm going to do is I couldn't quite figure out how to link the video stuff with my presentation, so I actually have to go into non-full screen mode, and then I'm going to click into this, and then hopefully this will work. So there should be audio coming up fairly soon here, so I'll click on this. And hopefully it'll go to full screen. Bueno. Alrighty. So this is actually the re-release, but it's the same functionally, really, as the original arcade version. So you can play it on modern consoles like the Xbox now. Can it move faster? Barely. There, see, it stepped up. Right? And so from, yeah, its humble beginnings, you know, we've come all the way from there into modern games. Like, I'll show you a little example of Dead Space, right? It uses some pretty sophisticated techniques to create fear, right? Although that game, I don't know, Space Invaders, pretty scary stuff back in the 80s, you know? Remember, it was like... It's the Cold War era, and it seemed like everything was about, like, you know, the other, like aliens invading. In other words, you know, the Russians are going to get us, right? It's kind of interesting presenting this in Berlin. So, it's true, isn't it? There's quite a history to this place. So with this, a lot of the examples that I downloaded were on the Atari, and I actually have a couple Atari 2600s, the ones that they had the fake wood to them, right? It's like vinyl, you can peel it off. But there's no music on that, because those games in general, does anybody know how big those games were, like in terms of memory? Anyone? Well, I'll just say it. It's like Combat is 2 kilobytes of game code. So that's all the graphics, that's all the behavior of the game, that's even like, you know, like the screen, like the fonts, it's the sound, it's everything in 2 kilobytes of ROM, right? So that's probably, the, you know, a lot of the time, back in these days, it would be the programmer that was often adding the music, and sometimes they just didn't have enough time to do that kind of stuff, okay? So levels of interactivity for adaptive music, a lot of the times you don't have any, which is totally fine. Not every game needs adaptive music, right? It's the same thing as not every movie needs a score, right? But it's No Country for Old Men. If you've seen that movie, there's almost no score. But the movie, the sound design is really super effective. So, you know, as far as levels of interactivity, either you have no music or the music is entirely linear, and that's totally fine as well. Moderate interactivity, you know, the song is divided into chunks and can be resequenced. And then if you get really tricky about it, you can put it into small chunks or layers that are modified within the game. There's stingers, you know, like either cymbal crashes or like other, you know, sounds that occur, like musical sort of stinger stuff that's like transient, like it's a short sort of clang that happens over top. And overlays, where you have something that's tempo sync that'll play over top, right? And we'll see some examples of that. And transitions, right? So, yeah, music can change visuals and gameplay as well. I'll show you Def Jam Icon that does that. And then for those, I don't know, it's a little aside there, the transvibrator for, I don't know, if you know what that means. I thought it was pretty funny. Okay, so Super Mario Brothers, here we go. And so with this example, think about how it's almost like you can close your eyes and just listen to the music and the sound design and you know what's going on with the game. To me, that's where games have very successful sound design and music, adaptive music design. So depending on where you are in the world, things will change, right? So, like, you know, something goes up there, you've got the sound from when you get big, right? You know, mushrooms are good for you. So you're bouncing around, and, yeah, is it loud enough, or... Okay, and so there we've got more mushrooms, of course. And then just the nature of the music itself is very sort of happy, and it's, you know, it's meant to model the way that you play the game. It's like, you know, the designer for this game, Shigeru Miyamoto, he was very interested in the idea of imaginary gardens, like little landscapes. You know, he would spend a lot of time figuring out interesting ways of almost like, you know, like you're, it's like you're lying on your belly, like looking at this environment. And here, of course, the music changes when you go underground, right? It becomes more sparse, a little scary, because the dark, it's scary, right? Right? And as a kid, you know, when the lights go out, it's very scary, right? So that's where a lot of its charm comes from. And the reason why this piece of music is so short is because the NES had almost no memory, right? So the sound spec is that you've got 2 pulse waves, a triangle wave, and a noise channel. And you've also got a sampled sound channel, a really crappy one, right? So, oh, right? The music gets faster, right? Because you're invincible, right? It's kind of like this, you know. And that's how you know that you can get these guys. Not only the fact that you're flashing, but also from the music as well. And then now you're normal again. So much for being a star. Okay? So yeah, the Nintendo, it had a very constrained set of technical capabilities that you could work with as a sound designer and a composer. And so Koji Kondo, the composer for Super Mario, it's quite well known. He basically goes hand in hand with that whole series. And then this piece here, you know, like it's a waltz, right? You're like waltzing underwater, right? You do a little dance. Look at him. He's got his arms out. There you go. So Koji Kondo would think a lot about the way that you're playing the game, and he would match that kind of feeling with the soundtrack. So it's not only the story that it's about, you know, you're not really playing an Italian plumber. It's you that's in there, right? The soundtrack isn't very Italian, I don't think. Right. If anything, it's sort of more kind of Calypso feeling, because it's this feeling of sunshine, right? And that's why a lot of us, when we listen to this piece, you know, it makes you smile. It's like, wow, it's so happy, right? This one here, the thing that, because you only have four voices that you can play at any given moment, listen to the way the sound effects cut out the music, but at the same time, if you're not listening to that, you don't necessarily notice it, right? So he engineered the music so that he could actually lose an instrument in any given moment and would still be fine. Yeah, crap, I talked over the whole thing. Did you notice that the music was dropping out? A little bit, yeah. I guess I would be the sixth voice over top of this thing. Okay, super scary, right? Here you got like these really fast arpeggios. So it's a good thing you're getting big and running around. Right? This one's super scary. And then that sound there. That one is using the sampled sound channel. And then, you know, you got your little thing at the end there to make you feel like you're the king, or you finished the level, right? So yeah, that is just, it's iconic. Like, he spent, I think it was actually the GDC that we met, that we were hanging out at, and Koji Kondo was there, and he's just, you know, he had a presentation, and he's just so thoughtful. It's like, it's an essay in minimalism, you know, using those, that kind of really constrained set of tools to create anything artistic, right? So, with this, adaptive music, yeah, layering, right. In the previous one, we were more doing branching, and I'll go into that later. What we can do is that we can, when musical tracks, like say you've got like three players, right? You've got a guitar player, a bass player, and a drummer, right? And you can change the volume on each one of those, and then you can create, sort of sculpt the sound, right? And you can also have full versions that are parallel mixes that can be cross-faded. So the nice thing about layering is that transitions can be very quick. You can have, I worked on a game where you had the full mix, and then from there, you basically did like a dub mix. You dubbed it down, like, I hope you know what dub music is, but anyways, you take the music and you remix it using a lot of effects, and it gives it a totally different feel. And so what you can do is you have these two pieces of music that are playing concurrently in synchronization, and it's like you're a DJ and you're just crossfading between one and the other, and you can get this real sense of this real sense of intensity when you go to the high intensity version, right? So the song integrity is maintained, but the problem is that sometimes, you know, it's like a DJ mix. It's, you know, if you just keep going back and forth, there's not necessarily a sense of, you know, that you have to put some effort into getting to that high intensity, because there's nothing that really signals it. And then, yeah, the full mixes, because maybe they're only 4 minutes long or something, is that they are parallels of each other, so they can get a little bit boring. So here's an example. This is borrowed from Koji Kondo's talk, where he's talking about when you ride Yoshi in this game, it adds, they're sort of like congas, or, you know, a little percussion thing. So I'll try not to talk over this one so much. Right, sounds like steel drums, you know? And then when you land on them, you hear the you hear that? So it makes you feel like you're riding, yeah? But the music doesn't stop, it's just an extra layer. And the layer's fun, too. So it makes it fun to ride Yoshi. Right? Yeah. That's so cute. It is. It's just, it's all nice, vibrant colors. This is not so cute. Okay. I taught for 5 years at the Vancouver Film School, and one of my students, the grads, ended up working on this game. Now she's working on, it's a zombie game. It's the second version. What is it? Dead Rising 2. Yeah, that's being produced in Vancouver, and so she's working on that now. But this one's interesting because it's what every, sort of video game composer's dream is where you can deform the graphics based on the music. Okay? Let's buzz through this one. There's a lot of examples. Bam. Oh, and try and listen for, I got a song that says Drop in Science in here. Is it loud enough out there? So the world deforms on the beats. Good for beating each other up in, what is that again? Grand Theft Auto. There's a whole side topic of like blaxploitation that's going on right now that I'd love to do a paper on, but I just haven't had time. So, okay, in this game, it's like the darling, dynamic layering. I'm just going to go into this because it actually, he does a little voiceover that's quite nice, talking about how the music layers build up over time.
As you progress through the 10 subsections of each level, the music gradually ramps up. So starting on section 1 of level 1, you only hear minimal bleeps and blues. But as you progress through the level, more elements of the song come into being, and the song continues to evolve.
Okay. So the mix gets heavier as you progress, but it's still the same piece of music. Experience more intense. Oh man, I love YouTube. I didn't even have to do anything there, I just edited it. It's so great. It's interesting when you're teaching and like you can't think of something and then a student just goes like, oh, just look at YouTube. Like, okay. I don't know why you guys are spending $42,000 a year to be here, but watching YouTube. Okay, so branching, this is what a lot of games do based on location. All right, jump to a different section of the song, or another song entirely, often in conjunction with transitions to sort of smooth that out. So the advantage is that there's many combinations of little chunks of music to fight repetition, because, for games, you play for a long time. And yeah, it makes a large amount of music just from short loops. But the disadvantage is that you've got this combinatorial overflow, like information overflow of how to transition. You've got five pieces of music that can transition to five other pieces of music at any given moment. Then it can get, choppy, right? So, and you can also combine branching with layers, which is what God of War does. They have an A and a B section. So each loop can have layers, and you can branch on those layers. So often, it allows for additional control and flexibility of branching. And you can control the mix of the A and B section depending on what's going on with the game. So if you're like, if you're doing really well in a battle against a boss or something like that, then you can switch to the B section and amp the intensity. And then if you exit that area, then you can branch to another piece of music. And the way that they were able to do that a lot in God of War is that because it's basically like it's just everything's at 11. Like that game is super amped. Like that game actually distorts the PlayStation 2 audio hardware. It's so loud. And so what happens is that they can actually just play a big, you know, like gong hit, and then they just fade to the other piece of music, and half the time you never even know, right? So it depends on the style of the game. You figure out what's going to work for you. So yeah, the additional overhead, of course, splitting everything into tracks, right? Here's SSX Tricky, where you actually use effects. When you jump up, it's like the bass drops out, and then when you hit the ground again, then the full mix comes back in again. This is another game from Vancouver. Right, so when you jump up, listen. Full mix again, right? Ow! Yeah. And then there's also overlays too. See? The tricky part didn't fade out. Because that's an overlay, right? Okay. I got it. Bank out of that one. Okay. Next. Yeah, the sync quantization, whatever. I mean, this is more, because I mean, I do adaptive music, and so these are things if you're a composer, it's interesting. Like I would say, large transient master, and like in God of War, it's like, boom, you can just switch to another piece of music, no problem. Or you might want to wait until the next note so that it's sort of in sync, or the bar, wait until the end of the current bar, or phrase, maybe you've got like a 4-bar phrase, often there'll be a fill at the end of that, and then you want to transition, right? Sometimes you have custom markers. There's, it's interesting. I played Medal of Honor Frontline. It's an old game for PlayStation 2. The sound designer and the audio director on that was Eric Kraber. And the music is actually adaptive. And the music is done by Michael Giacchino. Anybody know him? He's, wow, well then. Let me educate you. So the interesting thing about that is, anybody heard of the film The Incredibles? Yeah, he's the composer for The Incredibles, but he first got started in games. Has anybody seen the television series Lost? No. He's the composer for Lost. No. Does anybody know Michael Giacchino now? All right. See, there you go, dropping science. Bam! All right, transitions. So, yeah, either you can do a silent break. In other words, you know, if you've ever heard a DJ, you know, where they're just like, they're trying to tempo, beat, match, and then they're like, ah, forget it. Then boom, right? And then it drops down. And then you just boom, you start the other one up. Well, that's like this. You can fade out, right? Play immediately. You can just like butt fade something right into the next. That is a technical term. Okay? And you can use a spirit's mask. Once again, like God of War. You can cross fade. This is stuff that I'm trying to work on now. EA, it's tricky. Not related to the EA. And then custom transitions based on Matrix. There's a guy, Guy Whitmore. He's working at Microsoft Game Studio, and he did a lot of stuff about adaptive music. And so if you look at this, yeah, you got 5 songs, and then you transition to any other 5 songs, you end up with 20 transitions, because it looks like this, transition matrix. So you're going from song number 3 to song number 1, well, that ends up being transition number 9. Right, and then if you go on from one song to the same song, you don't need a transition because it's the same song. So you minus the diagonal, right? If you're working within this, you can also often these ones will be related to intensity. So you know this will be like low intensity to high intensity, low intensity to high intensity. So often you can actually group these and make less than 20 different combinations. So that's things can get very tricky if you're trying to especially match not only tempo, but then also to try and match key as well. So usually a lot of games will stay in the same key. There'll be modal shifts and stuff like that. Okay, adaptive music parameters. These are things that come from the game, right, that you can modify in the score, the tempo, the groove, the swing. This doesn't happen a lot, but it happened in Mario, right? You went from a 4-4 to a 3-4, right? The location you can change, note articulation, legato, staccato, like if it's long or if it's like sort of punchy, the instrumentation, accent, so you can make accents fall at different points, the effects, you can do volume, reverb, delay. If you're playing SSX, actually when you go through like a tunnel area, there'll be reverb applied. right? And there's other games as well that use reverb too. This one, Braid, is an interesting kind of like indie sort of breakout game. And they do some neat stuff with this because they actually got their sound score from Magnatune, and then they licensed it. So the music was actually around for like sometimes even, I think even up to 10 years, right? But it sounds very innovative when added to this game that you do some really interesting things with time. So that gets mirrored in the soundtrack as well. So even though the composers, some of them are like cellists and stuff like this, they compose this music having no idea that it would be put in a video game, but it actually becomes adaptive because they make the music slow down to fit the time change. So let's a little bit louder, please. You hear it goes backwards? Goes forwards again? Right, backwards? So it really gives you a feel of going forwards and backwards in time. Nice heart music. Right? So that is video game music too. It's interesting that music was not meant for games to begin with, but games appropriated it, right? Triggers from the game, you know, obviously location, XY location. One of the new Lara Croft games uses micro-scoring techniques. There's a guy that's written about that. And then state, like we've seen, when you're invincible, you got star power, you grow large with mushrooms, and then AI, level of detection, if the AI, the artificial intelligence, can see where you're at or what they're thinking, right? To me, that's one of the hugest things that's going to happen in adaptive music, is that you start getting smart, like artificial intelligence, about what's going to happen next with music. So it's not just going to always be playing the same thing. It will actually think like, okay, what kind of emotion do I want to have happen here? You know, not just always be playing the same thing. All right. Oh, yes, more Mario. This one will probably be difficult to tell, but what happens with this game, oopsies, sorry, thank you, is that it will actually pan, actually in surround. It's not in surround here, but it'll pan in stereo depending on where Shadow Mario is. So that's how you locate where the Shadow Mario is by listening, and then it's actually a piece of music that's playing, not just a sound effect. So right now, of course, he's right in the middle, but we'll wait until he pans off to the side. Is it loud enough? It sounds really quiet here. It's loud enough? A little bit louder? Louder, bitte. See, he went over there. Did you notice? Does it sound like it's coming out of a different side?
No.
Right. See, he's going side to side, right? Okay. So I think you get the idea there. Yeah? All right. So that's using stereo panning or surround panning. Okay, so these are some things that I got from his talk, just that he breaks music down, adapts music into three different sort of main areas. Rhythm, so the tempo of the gameplay, and like I was saying, also the players, the way that you're actually hitting the button, the way that your heart, the way that your heartbeat is, and also I guess the heartbeat of, Space Invaders, is reacting to the game, right? Balance. It's interesting, he doesn't actually submit any songs until he has about four or five songs that really fit together, because the music creates its own environment, it creates its own space. The great thing about sound is that sound is all around you, right? So even if you want to, it's very hard to tune out sound. It's something, especially music, will hit you at a subconscious level, and it's the way of describing things that are behind you, or things that are about to happen, or things that people are thinking about, right? So that was, it's been used, you know, even since, well, not just Star Wars, but before that you have Wagner and other people that use that to great effect, right? Interactivity, this is a bit new, this is to do with games, right? This is huge. To have the music fit the gameplay, or else it's just wallpaper, right? And then it can pull you out of the immersion. And so what hopefully we'll talk about in our panel is the fact that if this is done really poorly, music can actually have a detrimental effect, and people will actually want to turn off the music. Okay, so I'm at about half an hour here, and I got a few more slides to go. I'm going to skip over this particular one because I want to focus on Dead Space. This one, the gameplay here, it's just the music, every time it hits a certain beat, the enemies jump. And so if you listen to the music, you can actually figure out when they're going to jump, and you can work around that. Okay? This one here in Mario World, you know, there's Yoshi again. But the interesting thing with this is that because of the technical specifications of going from the NES to the Super NES, the Super NES allowed you to do reverb. So what are you going to do when you enter a cavern? You add reverb, right? And so it changes the nature of what you can do with the adaptive music based on the platform. Okay? So as things get better and better, you know, there's more that we can do. This is just a, you know, program that allows you to produce adaptive music. This is getting used more and more in games. So this is AudioKinetic WYs. So this is a Canadian company, and they're basically producing a system that's really taking the industry by storm. So they're doing a really great job at making a system that allows you as a composer to make adaptive music and try it out separately from the game. This is only really recently happened. Like, you can do it with Ableton Live a little bit, but this is something that's definitely new. Okay, so we'll play a little bit of Dead Space here. Hopefully we won't get too scared. Yeah. All right, so this is a recent EA game. This one should be a that's probably a good level.
Huh, that doesn't look good. She's taking a lot of damage.
The trap system's offline. Getting around is going to be difficult. The air seems to be flung again. That's a start.
What the hell was that?
Automatic quarantine must have tripped when the filtration system restarted. Everybody relax.
What was that? Did you hear that?
Not sure.
The hell? I gotta come into the room with us.
Jesus! Oh my!
Intelligence level. So what they did to make that game scary is that they approached the adaptive music design specifically for the fact of, let's figure out how to make people sort of scared, like afraid. And so they have various things that are fear emitters, like, you know, when you're fighting those bad whatever necromorphs or whatever they're called, or if there's a dark corner or something like that, then the music will ramp up sometimes. And then when you reach a certain fear level, then the music will just slam, right? So that's a very tricky thing that, you know, horror movies are really good at their use, like good horror movies are good at their use of audio, okay? So that's sort of a very recent example of effective use. I'm going to skip over this one. Electroplankton, generative music. You know, it's a tricky thing where you can actually generate the notes based on gameplay. It's more of a musical toy, but still, it's, you know, quite effective for gameplay. Here's some stuff that I worked on. I'm going to glaze over this as well. You can have a look more on my website. I created a piece with other people, and so what we did is we put content from youth of that area where the art gallery was, and so we put video, images, music, sound, and then they did text here. And to make it so that it kind of fit together, like it wouldn't just randomly go from piece of audio to like whatever. Everything was tagged with a certain tag that would mean, like, if there's, like, if you kind of read this, it said quiet and then warm and then their friends, right? So there would be tags on everything, and then it would worm its way through the database. So it would actually go through things that were interrelated. There's me. There's my sandals. And so it did image detection, and the faster people would move in front of this exhibit, the intensity level of the music would go up. So it was quite interesting. And then it had the related visuals as well. So to show that, you know, I don't just work in video games, I work a little bit in art stuff. And then a live performance, often I use this piece of software called Audio Mulch for the film The Corporation. I did music for that, and I did a lot of it using Audio Mulch. And so there's many parameters in here that are very similar to working live with a game. Either you can get it from a controller, like, you know, playing around with some knobs, or you can get that real time from a video game. All right, and here's, you can use Ableton Live to do performances or to do remixes, right? And so the cool thing that's about to happen, I hope, is that composers will be able to use Ableton Live and then just export their session into the game, and then things will get remixed, you know, based on the way that the game's playing. Here's a little piece of software you can download and play yourself. I'm not going to go over the demo, but you can have a look on my website. So if you're interested in playing around with sort of branching adaptive music, this is low intensity, medium intensity, high intensity, and then it just switches between those depending on the intensity level. Okay? And this is how it's. So we're all done. Cheers.